And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great show for you this week. We're obviously going to catch up on the news and all of that, but our deep dive is going to be on government overreach and how the tech companies may actually be the ones that are going to protect us from our governments, even though they're the ones that have been data mining the bejesus out of us for forever. If you couldn't hear it and you couldn't tell, I'm obviously still recording from home and broadcasting from home due to coronavirus, very much looking back to getting into the radio station studios sooner than later. But that is what we are talking about. It's going to be a great time. So stick around. And as always, let's start with the news. And in Facebook news, and we actually have two different Facebook things I'm going to be talking about, because Facebook, or rather Facebook's property Instagram, has been caught up in two different scandals. And one of these could actually cost Facebook $500 billion. And I think it's about time. Now, here's what's going on, and we're going to dive right in, because the first scandal is that Instagram, as I mentioned, who is owned by Facebook, hasn't been deleting your pictures when they're supposed to. Now, here's what they found out. A security researcher named Sagat Pokharal requested a copy of his photos and direct messages from Instagram, and he was sent data that he had deleted more than a year prior to this request, which shows that the information had never been entirely removed from Instagram servers. Now, Instagram says it usually takes around 90 days to completely remove data. This is typically known as a retention policy. So, for example, if you have email through like Gmail or Office 365 and you delete something and then empty it out of your recycle bin, typically that's only going to be held onto for about 30 days to 90 days, and then it gets recycled into free space because it's advantageous for the cloud platforms to recoup that space because they have an always growing data set. But security researchers have found similar issues, not just with Instagram, but with other services in the past doing things like this, like Twitter, which retains direct messages between users for years after they were supposedly deleted. In this specific case, though, the problem was only exposed because Pokharal had the option to download a copy of his data from Instagram, because Instagram introduced a download tool in 2018 to comply with the European Union's new data privacy regulation called GDPR. Now, Instagram says this was due to a bug in its system that they have now fixed, quote-unquote bug, and Pokharal actually was rewarded a $6,000 bug bounty for basically highlighting this problem. But here's the thing. He discovered this bug in October of 2019, and he is saying it was now just fixed earlier this month in August as I'm sitting here talking to you. And so I think that is totally suspect. They were keeping your pictures and messages to data mine you. That's my belief, which I think brings us to the second scandal that we are talking about here with Instagram. A lawsuit was just filed against Instagram, accusing them of collecting biometrics data of people who did not agree to the platform's terms of services. And I will basically explain that to you in a moment here. Now, the terms of service of Instagram basically says that they do have a feature that uses facial recognition that can be turned on by users of Instagram. And Instagram has stated, if we introduce facial recognition technology to your Instagram experience, we will let you know first and you will have control over whether we use this technology for you. However, according to this lawsuit, Instagram automatically scans faces who don't have an account on Instagram but appear in the user's post. So for example, I don't have an Instagram account, but if I am in a picture of somebody that does and that person posts it to Instagram, then I automatically get scanned if facial recognition is turned on, which I believe it is for all users by default, although I think you can control that, which means they are going to scan me. Now, the logical conclusion then is that this could be used to identify people in the picture that are not Instagram users and then match them to Facebook's massive facial recognition database and start making social links and connections between the users. Or they could also use this to hone basically for targeted advertising. All of this without consent. If they were doing this in a private manner, what would happen is I would get my face scanned, and as a non-Instagram user, they would say, okay, he's not in the Instagram facial recognition database, and then I would be immediately removed from that. I would basically be dropped. They're not doing that. They're keeping my face there, even though I'm not in Instagram. And then they can basically then go ahead and link it to the massive facial recognition database that they're attached to that is run on the Facebook platform. And that is the problem that we have with data mining in social media. Even if you don't have an account, your friends and family are putting you into the ever-growing, massive Facebook facial recognition database that Facebook allows the U.S. government, basically the intelligence services, law enforcement, etc., as well as other entities, to access at unprecedented levels, according to past reporting, first pretty much brought to light by Edward Snowden. Now, because this lawsuit was filed in California, the CCPA, or California Consumer Privacy Protection Act, kicks in, and this could be up to a $500 billion fine for Facebook. And here's hoping that actually goes through. And the reason why I say that is because we need to have a really hard lesson to get the free social media platforms basically on the same page where they are going to start taking our privacy seriously. Now, think about this. Facebook is something like a $600 to $700 billion company, which means that if they are leveled a $1 billion fine, that's pretty much chump change for them. That's not even 1% of their estimated worth. And so that's a pretty easy storm for them to weather. And as they continue to grow, like, let's say, in value, that's obviously an issue. But a $500 billion fine is something that you can't ignore. That is profit wiping out. It is a massive, massive problem, which then is a shot across the bow to virtually every other online platform. I'm thinking Google, Twitter, etc., who would then look at that and say, we cannot be in that boat. We are not going to take that much of a hit and wipe half of our value out in one shot. And so they would much rather adhere and comply and figure out a different way to make money off of us. Obviously, there have been other thoughts on this in terms of, well, if we are using this free platform, everybody can just leave, and that would be fine. But I recently did a podcast and a video on basically this being essentially a digital crack addiction for a lot of people, that we are checking our phones something like 80 plus times a day, which is a huge, huge problem that a lot of people have. They are basically feeding this habit continuously with our news feeds and all of this. And so people are not going to be abandoning this in droves simply because they're being put into a facial recognition database, in the same way that a crack addict or a meth addict isn't going to give it up because they realize, well, I'm basically harming my health and I'm going to lose my teeth and all of that, yet they keep coming back. And so the only way that we are going to get some kind of traction here is basically hitting them where it hurts the most, which is the financial side. So we'll see where this goes. I'm very curious to see where this is, but if you use Instagram, or you don't, but you have friends that use Instagram and you're in their pictures, you have been put into a facial recognition database without your consent. And that should basically drive you up a wall, as it does me. And so that is your Facebook/Instagram news of the week. And in Russia news, and I thought this was actually really interesting, because this is according to the Washington Post from about a month ago or so, and I kept meaning to put this on the air, but I just kept running out of time, rather, when I was talking about, all the various news and breaches and deep dives and all of that. But I wanted to get to this eventually, because I think it's really interesting, because President Trump has acknowledged in July, the middle of July, that he had ordered a clandestine military cyberstrike against Russian trolls in 2018 to disrupt their internet access during the midterm election. Until basically mid-July, neither the White House nor the Pentagon had publicly confirmed the operation, which had been classified at the time. Now, in the past, President Trump had questioned whether Russia was involved, obviously, in things like the DNC hack in 2016, which I know that actually did happen. I can't really get into the details here on the air, but suffice to say, by virtue of my job, who I know what I have access and privy to, we do know that this actually did happen, because there has been a multitude of evidence from American intelligence services that Russia was indeed responsible for that. Specifically, it was a group known as APT, or Advanced Persistent Threat Number 29, also known as Fancy or Cozy Bear. Now, during an interview with the Washington Post, President Trump suggested that former President Barack Obama was aware of this and did basically little or nothing to prevent these hacking attempts. But as the Washington Post also points out, President Obama not only called out Russia for the DNC hack, but also suggested that Russian President Vladimir Putin was directly involved in these efforts. And in 2016, President Obama imposed sanctions on Russia over the election hacking. And so we're going to see how this basically plays out in terms of the fallout for the election here, because obviously we've got a lot of moving parts in our election security and all of that. You've probably heard me talk about this here on the radio regarding our election security, or lack thereof, as we are not pushing election bills through and all of that. It's a very serious problem. But here we are, and we're going to see if we are doing anything else to, let's say, disrupt Russia's internet capability. We have vastly more infrastructure than they do in this regard, so that could be another very possible strike that we have, but we'll see. Also in 2018, a lot of pundits, and I try to be politically neutral here. I think that my job in cybersecurity is agnostic to this, so I just report the facts as I am getting them from various outlets and all of that. I'm not trying to get into a political fight, with anybody that loves or hates the president, in this manner. But there's also been speculation since this Washington Post report came out, as I've obviously been keeping on this and various other things, that a lot of people are speculating that, well, maybe the United States will not do anything in terms of this kind of action because it's a presidential election cycle. And a lot of people are speculating that the president has ties to Russia, not necessarily for intelligence or espionage reasons, but business and financial interests there. And so it's in Russia's best interest to try to keep him, elected, or rather reelect, have him reelected. And conversely, I've read articles that say China would prefer to have Joe Biden, former Vice President Biden, actually get elected now. So we're going to see where this goes. But I think there's a lot of ping pong being played with this kind of stuff. But if we hit Russia in 2018 to disrupt internet access during the midterm elections, to me, that seems like it would be in election security's best interest, especially when we are not passing election security bills through the Senate right now. They are currently being blocked by the majority leader, Mitch McConnell. So we will see what happens here. But that is your Russia news of the week. And in internet usage news, I know you've heard me talk about in the past how we've obviously increased our streaming and all of that, through the pandemic. But I want to go actually back to a March 24th to March 28th survey of 6,800 Americans, because we were only a couple of weeks into the pandemic. And as I was reviewing all of this information here in August, it is amazing to see just how quickly we ramped that up and adapted, as the entire world was scrambling to make sense of this, where to find toilet paper. The government hadn't even started sending out checks to Americans yet, and all of that. And so here we are in the first couple of weeks, and we immediately see that the one thing that we really settled into, or that was a stabilizing force in our lives, was streaming, because over 85% of those respondents said their basically at-home television and movie consumption had increased just in the first couple of weeks or so. One-fifth of the surveys also added that they purchased a new streaming service as a result of the quarantine, and those numbers continue to go up, and we can see that in the stock prices of the streaming services and all of that. So Disney, basically topped the list. Basically 30% of new adoptions were Disney, followed by Hulu, and then just combined other services, followed by Amazon Prime and Netflix. Not to mention making the list was HBO, Starz, Showtime, Apple TV, and YouTube TV. Netflix at the time was still the global leader, and apparently they still are, but they basically exploded in the first quarter of, or coming off the first quarter of 2020, more than any other service, with 59 million basically downloads and streams in their services. And that is obviously a very huge thing. You know, so it is very interesting to see where we have gone with these numbers. And as we continue to look at this, and, you know, I've recently done podcasts and videos on basically the aftermath of this initial burst that we've seen, because obviously we're still in lockdown, we're still social distancing, we're not living the same way we did before. And so by virtue of that, we are seeing, let's say, a rise in depression, a rise in consumption of alcohol and other things. And I think it dovetails with this. And so this is from the very beginning of the pandemic, and it shows just how dependent we are on technology. And I thought that would be a very interesting food for thought type situation for all of you. And so that is your consumption news of the week.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you, or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And the last couple of weeks in data breaches has just been absolutely insane. And as always, before I dive into the data breaches, let's thank the people that sent me things, linked me, messaged me, whatever it was to get me this information. It is always, always appreciated. And that is Jason Dance, David Walker, Chris Fallon, Jacqueline Wolf, and Ronaldo Abreu. And everyone, thank you so much, and please keep sending those tips. And with that, let's start with Pulse Secure VPN. Now, an attacker published on August 4th a list of plain text usernames and passwords, meaning anybody could see these passwords, along with IP addresses for more than 900 Pulse Secure VPN enterprise servers, meaning these are the actual servers that run the VPN for them. According to a review, the list includes IP addresses of Pulse Secure VPN servers, so they can basically be found on the internet. Pulse Secure VPN server firmware versions, meaning this is the hardware that's actually running these servers. And if they are older versions of firmware, there might be vulnerabilities in there. Not to mention local usernames and passwords, account details, VPN logins, everything. So if you use Pulse VPN, or excuse me, Pulse Secure VPN, heads up to you. Moving on, let's talk about LG and Xerox. This is actually an update because operators of the Maze ransomware gang have published on August 4th tens of gigabytes of internal data from their networks, basically of enterprise businesses, from LG and Xerox. And this is obviously a huge issue because they're attempting to obviously extort money from LG and Xerox. And they leaked 50.2 gigabytes from LG and 25.8 from Xerox, so they claim. Neither company so far has made statements publicly. Moving on, let's talk about Canon. This is the camera maker. I believe they do printers still as well. They suffered a ransomware attack, basically, that impacted numerous services, including their email, Microsoft Teams, their website in the USA, and other internal applications to that organization. In an internal alert sent to employees, Canon disclosed that the ransomware attack actually did happen, and they are working to address this. So that's obviously a huge problem. And on top of this, researchers have been tracking a suspicious outage on image.canon, which is their cloud and video storage service, resulting in the loss of data for users, basically that had the free 10 gigabytes of storage when they bought a camera, a Canon camera or whatever that was. And so that website suffered an outage on July 30th of this year. And over 6 days, the site basically showed that it was, you know, had a status of updating itself. And then it went back on into service on August 4th. So That's a huge problem, and if you have anything to do with Canon, heads up to you. Moving on, let's talk about Blackbaud. You may have remembered my past radio show, or even the one before that, I think, that Blackbaud is basically a software platform that a lot of charities and educational institutions use to track those people that donate to them and those relationships and all of that. And so they got hit and ransomed, and that's been a whole big problem because a ton of institutions have had to disclose, and in the last couple of weeks, we've seen hundreds of disclosures from these institutions, and we are basically seeing, and I'm not even going to go through the entire list, we'd be here for the entire hour and beyond, but some of the more interesting ones was Cal State Northridge, WBUR, which I believe is both radio and TV, attached to Boston University, Boston University itself as well. Also, Como Friends, which is a nonprofit that supports the Como Park Zoo and Conservatory in Minnesota, Northern Lights Health Foundation, the John Ball Zoo in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Bletchley Park Trust out of the United Kingdom, Bishop McGinnis Catholic High School in Oklahoma City, the Latin School in Chicago, Emporia State University in Kansas, and George Washington University, among hundreds of others. So this is going to keep getting worse, and odds are, as you listen to me, you are over the weeks, rather, or months, you're probably going to hear more about Blackbaud. That is your quick update of them for this week. Moving on, let's talk about Zello, Z-E-L-L-O. They are a push-to-talk app that was famously used in the last major hurricane in Florida to keep people connected and talking. They disclosed a data breach that revealed users' email addresses and hashed passwords after basically discovering quote-unquote unauthorized activity on their system. So if you use Zello, heads up. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Kentucky's unemployment system. They had a second data breach in the past 4 months that just came to light. And basically, this alleged breach was the Office of Unemployment Insurance, and their online system was hit. And so that is obviously a very serious issue, because what's happening is claimants that are using this system in Kentucky are now seeing information on other claimants, which is what's been going on for quite some time with the federal government's SBA-owned sites that a lot of the states, including Kentucky, uses. That's a huge problem. Moving on, let's talk about Intel. This is the processor maker. You might be listening to me on a computer if you're streaming me that might have an Intel processor in it. They're huge. This is basically part of the Kotlin breach, which I mentioned on my last radio show. This is a researcher that was able to basically hit Nintendo, Disney, and others. And so obviously they put the information out there. That's a huge, huge issue. And there is now more information on Intel, because a 20 gigabyte folder of Intel's intellectual property was dumped online, and this includes things like the coding and design references for Intel's various processors like Kaby Lake, Elkhart Lake. These are the internal codes they use when they're developing these things. Their consumer electronics firmware development kit, the coding for that, schematics on BIOS, which is a very critical part of your computer that essentially tells everything where everything, tells the hardware where everything is, and on and on. So that is a major problem that Intel has, because that is a huge leak of intellectual property for them. Moving on, I want to give you an update on the Shiny Hunters breach. If you recall, 386 million records were dumped in late July, and we've all been sifting through this data since. And so more companies have come to light, one of them being ProctorU, which is an online exam tool, got leaked by Shiny Hunters on July 27th, and 444,267 accounts were basically exposed, including usernames, full names, phone numbers, complete residential addresses, and password hashes. The other website that got hit is a company called Havenly, which apparently is all about interior design and home decor. Now, they had a breach notification on their website, Have I Been Pwned? And the data from Havenly includes customer email addresses, names, phone numbers, geographic locations, and passwords stored in hashed form. So hopefully those can't be cracked, but we shall see. But heads up, if you use ProctorU or Havenly, your data was dumped in late July. Moving on, let's talk about MedEvolve. This one is actually way overdue, and it's kind of interesting. Here's what's going on. HHS, the Health and Human Services Department of the federal government, followed up on a leak that was first reported in May of 2018 by MedEvolve. At this time, basically, it was noted that two MedEvolve clients had exposed data, one of which was Beverly Held MD, and a researcher found that basically data files were exposed without any kind of login or authentication required, and there was roughly 12,000 Social Security numbers exposed. This was basically due to an insecure FTP site, but But just this past week or two is when they actually got around to notifying the patients. This happened in May of 2018, and over 2 years later were those patients notified, even though it was disclosed to the federal government. And I think that is just a huge falling down here. And so heads up if you use MedEvolve. Moving on. Let's talk about American Seating Company. They had one of their email accounts internally taken over in January, and by virtue of that, a whole bunch of information was dumped, including names, social security numbers, driver's license numbers, financial account information, payment card information, medical information, email addresses, and password/answers to security questions, usernames and passwords, as well as those answers to security questions, health insurance information, employee identification number, and or tax identification number. Obviously, a lot of that information isn't for American Seating's customer that they actually make seating, but a lot of that is for their employees. And so heads up, if you use American Seating or you are employed there, your data was compromised. Obviously, that's a huge problem. Moving on, let's talk about Reddit. Now, Reddit suffered a massive hack. Multiple subreddits were actually defaced during the last 24 hours. If you are not familiar with Reddit, it's basically a place where people can post, comments or topics online as well as articles, and then people can have discussions on them. That is the most rudimentary explanation of Reddit that I can give. Now, the attackers posted messages to these hacked subreddits, meaning these were basically little forums where people were discussing specific things, and basically these attackers posted messages supporting President Donald Trump's re-election campaign. Now, Reddit administrators basically urged users to enable two-factor authentication on their accounts, which everybody should do, and change their passwords. According to reports, the subreddit accounts had been compromised basically by the attackers, who then also tweeted out that Reddit's basically moderators were easy to take over. So it looks like they hit a moderator or an administrator at Reddit, and then they were able to get into multiple forums, if you will. So the subreddits that were hit, and there was a ton, but some of the more notable ones were the subreddits for the NFL and various NFL teams, the TV show Black Mirror, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, various other TV shows, the Avengers, the movie, podcast, Disneyland, and just a ton more. And so obviously the speculation has begun. Was it actually a pro-Trump supporter, or was it somebody that wanted to annoy people and force them to vote against the president in the upcoming election? That is actually currently being debated on Reddit.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.